So, starting the interview, it's the 5th of February, and talking to Mr. Robert Corrin about his time as a fisherman and cox of the Douglas lifeboat. So, how did you first get involved with fishing?
I've grown up with it all my life. Father was a fisherman, a lifeboat man.
Right.
We've all been growing up with it. There's four boys at home here, and we're all fishing. I should say three. But the other fellow in Australia, that I've got a brother in Australia, he was fishing as well, and a sister.
Right.
Yeah, so we're, well, we only lived on the quayside, like, we're just growing up. This is the first we've ever lived on the quay.
So, what type of boat did your father have? What type of fishing did he do?
Mainly scallops and crinnies, but they used to sea net a lot years ago, like, during the water.
So what was his boat called?
St. Mackled. He had a couple of other things before that, like, but I don't remember that.
So did he encourage you to go into fishing?
No.
So what was his view about fishing?
Well, it always gave him a good living all his life, because he'd never done anything else now. His father was a sailor. He used to travel around, like a merchant navy or something like that, only on the sailing ships, like.
So he was from Douglas as well?
As far as I know, yeah.
So did you actually sort of go fishing on your father's boat, or did you go and work?
I had times, yeah. Well, I didn't start off on this boat, no, I started somewhere else first. I'd done a year or so on the farms, and then I took a disagreement up there and I ended up going fishing. So I started out with a cousin, and then his boat got laid up during the summer, and I started on another boat then, the Swindlers, which was a big fishing family as well. And I was with them for a lot of years, and then the old man got another boat, so I went with him. So then we had that one for a few years, and then he sort of retired, and the younger brother came fishing with us as well. And about, I think it was about 75 or something, we ended up getting another two, so that we all had a board each at one time.
Right. And that was with scallops and crinnies?
Yeah. Oh, we used to do a bit of herring fishing as well, pear trawling and bottom trawling. We only done only done it one season on the prawns. Didn't like that job. And scallops and crinnies is mainly what it's always been like. And yeah, they're the mainstay of the fishing things. It's changing slightly now, like, boats going further afield now, our boats, like, still mostly on scallops and crinnies.
So what type of work do you do on the fishing boats? And sort of, I mean, do you go out for like a week at a time, or of days?
No, we only done daytime, like. We used to go out about 4 or 5 o'clock and back for about 6. We'll finish, yeah, just daytime fishing. Like, years ago, like the likes of the Fleetwood men, they wouldn't go to scallops and crinnies because you're hauling every hour.
Right.
Whereas they used to tow for 4 hours, sort of thing, for whitefish. So they didn't like scallops and crinnies, but the way things progressed over the years, or declined over the years, the fish went scarce. And so lots of them went to scallops and crinnies as well.
So saying about sort of 4 or 5, is that 4 or 5 in the morning?
Yeah.
Through to sort of 6 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
So about how far out would you get in that time?
Well, up to about 20 odd mile.
Yeah.
Well, we'd sometimes just shoot inside, like about 6 mile off, 7 mile off, and then just tow away off and the way back in again. Or if we found a good spot, like, we'd steam straight to it the next morning, take a couple of hours, we'd go 16 miles or something in a couple of hours. And then we might just tow out or just fish around that area.
So, how do you actually... I've never been out on a fishing boat.
Oh, trial and error is a lot of it, yeah. Trial and error, plus the older fellas, like, had an idea, like, where to go for sandy, stony bottom sort of thing, yeah. So they had a good idea, and so it's just sort of come down through the generations, so... middle of the 60s, like boats started getting decker navigators in. So it wasn't a case of just knowing the ground. They knew where they were, so they to within 50 or 100 foot sort of thing. So you just took the, like it was decker navigator, it was just like reading like a clock, and you have green clocks and red clocks, like stations they were. And cross reference, they knew exactly where they were, sort of thing. So.
And is the sort of Queenie and Scallop, has that got a sort of a particular season, or is that something that can be done throughout the year?
It can be done all the time, but it's not recommended to be done. Like, lots of places got fished out, like in England and whatnot, mainly because they didn't keep to, they hammered the grounds and they didn't keep to particular sizes, like our season sort of thing. It was around the Isle of Man was a lot more stricter than what it was anywhere else.
So what's the season?
Well, Scots now is beginning of November to the end of May. But Queenie's like you can fish all the year round. It's like everything else, you get your good times and bad times. You move to a different, you think they're getting fished out and then all of a sudden they'll come back sort of thing. Well, not all.
And the fishing grounds are all the way around the island?
More or less, yeah. Yeah, it's a good area for Scots and Queenies all around the island, yeah. Right across to Liverpool Bay. Over to Peel Side, like Peel's line goes out about 6 or 8 miles, like sort of thing. Because now you come into Mud on the other side of Peel, and it's the same when you get down to the Sound, but you can steam over that and then you can start fishing the other side.
So what are the conditions like when you're out at sea?
Well, they're not bad actually, it's what you get used to. Most of the boats have all the cooking facilities aboard sort of thing, and sleeping arrangements, like they have bunks, and well, they all have them nowadays really. Some boats will stay for a couple of days. The bigger ones on the Scotland, like, were slightly larger than our boats up to a few years ago. They used to stop out for the week sort of thing, depending on the fishing. At one time they used to just, so when you first start fishing, they used to do a couple of days and then go and land and come back and do another couple of days and that would be their weekend off then. It's a Scottish tradition, they start Sunday midnight and we'll fish through to Friday tea time, something like that. Whereas the Manx will just go their daytime, which gives the stocks a rest and plus a grand chance to settle a little bit. And when you're fishing day and night, like, they're not getting much chance to settle either.
How many people would you have on sort of a fishing boat as the crew?
Well, the average crew around the Isle of Man was 3, but there's been a decline in some boats now working shorthanded, like two men, which you shouldn't do really by right for safety, but and the bigger ones like have got a couple more, like, but they're doing sort of trips like 48 hours or something like that nowadays, but they didn't used to do that.
And I take it that everybody can do all the jobs, or is it that somebody specialises?
Well, the skipper mainly stays in the wheelhouse and comes out to haul sort of thing. And he's more or less the specialist of anybody like that. But most of them can do most of the jobs. Like, yes, you're all familiar with everybody else's job.
So, I was going to ask how you got involved with the lifeboat.
Again, I grew up with it as well. Father had been in it for 40 years or so. Well, since he was 18 till he kicked them out, so then. And brothers were in it. I got a brother now that's a set coxswain off the lifeboat. It's another thing that's just come up with all the family all through the years. I used to have cousins on board as well. It was only two or three families really that ran out of water. The Swindlers and the Currans and the Lees sort of thing. All related and all friends, pals.
So was it something that sort of like most of the fishermen would be involved in at some time, or just a sort of small number?
Usually the ones that lived handy around the harbour sort of thing, because at one time it was the Maroons that were calling you out and there wasn't the cars like years ago. Later the Maroons, those who lived in Sound of the Maroons, like, yes. Usually it was the first 6 down, and most of them did have something to do around the quayside or with boats sort of thing. And up to the late 60s, 70s, I think there was only about two fellas on the boat that wasn't a fisherman. And like over the years has changed now, and now it's the other way around. There's only two on that on Douglas anyways, that is a fisherman. But that seems to be getting the same all over, like in Britain and everywhere else. That's right, up to the 70s, like, it was maroons. And we're, like, when the old man was only coxswain for a year or two, and then a cousin took over. He was a coxswain for 18 months or something, and I took over for him. In between times, like, the maroons were going out, and there was a lot of was done on the telephones, like, if we got caught, like, herself would ring around while I got dressed or went on the way down, so I knew there was somebody on the way down, because, you know, cars come into it and all that sort of thing now. And so they'd be down shortly after me.
Yeah.
But now we're on pages now, sort of thing.
So, sort of, how did it sort of fit in with working as a fisherman, sort of like training and your work with the lifeboat?
Well, up until this latter year, since the last 10, 15 years, we've got to do a bit of training ourselves now. Like, it was something like the skipper's mainly done all the coxswain's done all mostly the work, all that sort of thing at the time. It was when we was going to a casualty, so I think it was only the coxswain and the engineer that done any work or something, because he usually be the wireless operator as well. But it's, how can I put it? There wasn't much that anybody else could do because
yes.
He didn't have the room. But now it's changed now, it's gone more technical now, like with the radar. Like, we didn't have a radar when I first did.
Right.
Well, when I first started, we didn't have a radar or anything. All we had was a compass and a wireless. And it used to be dead reckoning then. But nowadays it's changed now that you've got all the radars and deck and navigators and everything else. It's gone a lot more technical now. Then we had a crew of eight, when I took over, and as I say, only two or three done had anything to do really until you got to the casualty. And then nowadays, like, everybody's got a job to do, so it makes it a lot easier, so they can a lot quicker.
Yes. Do you get many sort of call outs?
No, we don't get about an average of a dozen a year. We're very quiet really around here.
And are they mainly sort of pleasure boats?
No, it's a bit of a mixture, like yachts. Well, actually, we seem to be doing a lot more cars than anybody else around the island. We got to cars on the cliffs, like we've been doing quite a few of that over the years. It's pretty well much not often we see a coaster. We've got just taking an odd sick person off a coaster or something like that, or an odd fish boat, we'll take a sick person off if they're bad, sort of thing. And then mainly it is yachts and fishing boats, like, there's not much difference in between.
Yeah. So, and what changes have you sort of seen from when you were a boy and your father was on the lifeboat, and what he used to talk about with the lifeboat?
Well, I think they used to get a few more calls than what we did, like, and they seemed to go in worse weather than what we, like, we don't really get too bad of weather, really. Dang it. Mainly the changes have gone in the boats, sort of thing, because from 8 knots we're going up to 17 and a half knots, 18 knots. So although we're only going twice as quick, you seem to have to think about five times quicker.
Yeah.
a lot more comfort in the boats now too, heaters in them and all sorts of things now to what we didn't used to have a heater in them. Well, we know exactly where we are now and everything. Technology's took over more than anything. And, well, I suppose if I was much older, I don't suppose I'd be taking it all in.
Yeah.
Mechanics have got a lot more job now to do. Before, all they did, machinery is pretty reliable. All they had to do was polishing, but now he's got to go around and check a lot more things now, like electrics and all that. He's got to keep checking every day. Well, I think so.
When you were younger, did you ever come across any of the sort of much older retired members of the lifeboat who could actually remember the lifeboat being rowed at? Because I know that recently in Peel, somebody's just died.
Who they think
was the last person to have rowed Peel lifeboat.
No, I don't know if anybody actually can remember that back now. Sonny Lou and Kane, I could say that you met, would, might remember, but I can't honestly tell you when Motor Sale came in. Like, he's near 90, so he's the only one that he said Rex, he can remember the boat house getting built, like, right. Your ex, he worked on it.
Now, I was just wondering if there were, when you were in your teens and 20s, people who were then in their 80s or whatever, who were sort of teasing you about sort of, oh, it's so easy now.
Strangely enough, I don't know, I think Douglas must be out of the way. We don't see many old fellas, like when they pack up in a crew, we don't see very much of them again after that, unless you just happen to meet them on the quayside sort of thing. But I don't remember, because I think it must be... I think she was a motor sailor when they built this boathouse.
Right. When was the boathouse?
About 1927.
Right.
Yes, well, by the pictures, like, they were motor sailors.
Right, yes.
But I wouldn't swear to that.
So, I mean, I was going to ask you sort of, you know, if there's ever any sort of concern about it sort of being dangerous, or whether it's a case of, well, it's, you do it and...
Well, it's all got potential things nowadays, because there seems to be a lot more, like, looking up, we've never had anything, thing is, but there's a lot more, you know, like liquid gas and all that sort of thing going around now. A lot more, there seems to be a lot more tankers going around to what there was years ago, sort of thing. I was just reading that book that about the shipwrecks around about the art.
Yeah.
And like there's not really an awful lot of the modern ships sort of things, like gas tankers, well, there ain't none of that.
Yeah.
And like so the most years ago they didn't carry that sort of chemicals, you know, dangerous chemicals. You know, we haven't got much chance of pollution. Well, there's more chance of pollution, I should say, around about what there used to be. Like, things have changed in that sort of respect. But they take a lot more precaution sort of thing nowadays. Like, we're a tanker there before Christmas. Like, this engine stopped. So just to be precautionary, like, everything was put on standby for them. Like we launched because we couldn't get his engines going, it was a gale of wind. Helicopter was put on standby ready for them to take the crew off or something like that. Or if the helicopter couldn't get there, we were there to do it, sort of thing. But most of the time, like, they don't give people a lot of common sense now. There's no such thing as we'll try and get it going, everything's put on standby,
yes,
ready, sort of thing.
With the sort of going out fishing for scallops and queenies, because you're only sort of doing it a day at a time, I assume that if the weather's not good, then you don't bother going out.
No, we didn't fish in gales and wind. Phosphor of 5, like, was sort of like the limit then. Or 5 or 6, like, just depend. If you were catching something, you like push it a little bit more, but if you weren't catching it, you'd get fed up.
And I suppose also with the sort of the metal dredgers, there's no point going out when the weather's bad.
No,
anyway.
Because half the time they're on, like, they're off the bottom sort of thing, you know, they're pulling and jabbing all the time. It's the same with the net, like your door comes off the bottom and, you know, when the wire pulls tight it lifts it everything up.
Were there sort of any sort of problems or anything that was potentially dangerous with the queenie or scallop fishing?
You mean working on the boat's
yeah.
line? Well, the biggest problem would be falling off the side.
Yeah.
Otherwise, no. Yeah, you just use common sense
yeah.
and, you know, everything goes out right if you use a bit of common sense.
How did it compare with the time when you went herring fishing?
Oh, herring fishing, smashing job to do. It was entirely different because with the dredges we used to just shoot and tow sort of thing all day, and then haul every hour sort of thing. And the same routine all the time, but on the herring, like, we could steam around most of the day and not do nothing like that. Just one tow at night time would make all the difference. When we went patrolling, we'd steam around and then many a time only one or two shots, like, would fill us, well, catch our quota. It was a far better job, a bit of excitement. Because what we used to do was you'd steam around, mark the fish, and steam back up through the tide, and put your net out, which had to be pretty quick, and your partner would come and take the other end of the net. come alongside you and take the other end of the neck and then shoot round it or whatever. It would only take about half an hour, three quarters of an hour. And then, but if it looked like you were on your home or on your way home a couple of hours later.
Right. And that was out of Douglas?
Yeah, mainly out of Douglas, east side. Yeah. We weren't very good on the other side for some reason. But a bottom trawl like that was much the same too. Like, you got to have a little bit of idea where you are, because the boat's been fishing them all that. It was for years, so like. But lots of them used to go on. If you got fed up with steaming around, you used to just shoot sometimes to tow away, give quick 20-minute tows, we used to do, like, sort of thing. Just to try, because sometimes they're having a really tight on the bottom and you can't see them.
So you actually sort of almost find where they are by sort of seeing them. Did you have any sort of
on the echo centers we used to get them, yeah. And a lot of years, like when we were fishing them, we had a net monitor so we could watch them going in as well.
Oh, right.
So we knew where the net was, so we could lift the net up and down.
Right. What actually is the net monitor?
It's just like another echo sender.
Right.
And it worked on battery. You had a what we call the bomb on top of the net, on the headline of the net. And then it would send pulses down to the bottom, and we could see the bottom of the net and the bottom of the ground as well. And then you could see the fish going in between. They're just like a mark.
Yeah.
And it also had like sent pulses up to the top as well.
Yeah.
So if the fish were going over the net, we could lift it up, or if it was going underneath, we could put it down.
When you got the sort of like the herring or the scallops or queenies back to Douglas, did you already have sort of like a market for them,
yeah.
Or did you have to find buyers once you...
No, we more or less had a market all the time. When we first started fishing herring, they used to go to an auction,
right.
And the buyers would be down, sort of thing. And, well, there was never no trouble with them, there was always somebody who took them.
Right. Was that an auction in Douglas?
Yeah, they did do it one time, yeah. Well, there used to be, hundreds of boats around here. I think there was about 130 boats fishing herring one night. If you went at night time, it was just like a little village when you were out in between them.
So about how many boats did they used to be at?
Weird Scotch, Irish, Welsh, and all sorts of things. I've counted over 130. So I wouldn't think there'd be much more than that. I would think maybe another 20 something. But that's around the Douglas side. I don't know about the other side. Yeah, because you used to get the Southern Irishmen coming up too, the chickens. But I don't really know how many of them was. But seeing the locks in now, seeing the harbour full of boats.
Yes. So about when did it sort of start trailing off?
Right, when we last fish out. 80s?
75.
No, that's when we started with the chrysalite, wasn't it? What were we in now?
79.
Yeah, we had the chrysalite 17 years, didn't we? And we started in the Manx Maid. We fished herring with Swindler, didn't we? Well, I started fishing herring in about 68, 69. But that was only on a small scale. We weren't very successful at it.
Right.
But the herring like themselves have been around here. Years. There used to be ring netters around here, and when we were kids we used to see the harbour full of ring net boats there.
Yes.
Like, and there used to be, I wouldn't have a clue how many, there was a lot.
Yes.
And then they used to, I've seen them just going out in the middle of the bay, just coming in here, discharging, going straight back out again, and just in the middle of the bay here, and
mm-hmm.
back in again half an hour later, so, a couple of hours later.
So the herring that you were getting, was that going to be sort of salted and...
Mostly went to be salted or something like that, but some did go for kipping, but mostly went for salt. Because the kippers here, I think they only take a couple of hundred. I can't really remember now whether it was crowns or units they could take. Must be crowns.
How many in a crown?
I've never counted them.
Right.
I think there was something like 500. But I wouldn't swear to that. Could have been more.
The the ones that were going for sort of salting, were they going on the Klondikers, or was that going?
Well, we're a mixture. Like, it depended on who bought them. Like, the Kipris usually got the first boats in if they could, so they could get on Kipron. The rest of them after that mostly went to Klondikers or barreled on the quay or somewhere.
Are there still Klondikers coming in?
Not into the island, no.
When about would that stop? Well, when did... Because I can
remember
that'd be
in the late 80s.
87, 88, I
Yeah, they moved over to Kilkeel.
Right.
Or Glass or somewhere like that. There was one or two over there. But the last ones I've heard of in the Irish Sea.
Where were the Klondikers sort of packing the fish for?
The Eastern Bloc there, Poland and all of them, the places. Like when I think of Poland.
So sort of like Hungary and
yeah.
Romania, I think.
Yeah. Things have changed. I'm sure you're a net monitor.
Oh, right.
Well, you wouldn't learn nothing wrong.
No.
It's just like a telescreen. Because that's what they were like. It was just like a telescreen. You just see a little screen like lines coming down through it. And it's like so your net coming along. That's your bottom.
Yeah.
And your surface, and your boat, and also was like it was a battery operated one. Well, nowadays they've got wires going down, but you had a bomb, as we call it there, it was really a transducer, and that would send pulses down to the bottom and up to the top, so you could watch the fish going into there or underneath. Like that's all it was like. You could, well, you'd mark them on your echo sounder underneath the boat, so you knew what was coming along, sort of thing. Like, if you were a pair trawl, sort of thing, and you started the mark, and your partner wasn't, you'd just pull the whole boat over, or the whole lot, like, you'd just turn and straighten up again, and then you could watch them on the net. That's all it was. It's the same with the echo sounders. Echo sounders, like, the depth sounders.
Yes.
And that's all it was. You just... Well, like the heron used to just stand up like that. They depend how thick they were.
Yes.
And but like the cod and whatnot, it would just be a little mark sort of thing, just as thick as a match.
Right.
And sprats would be an upside down V.
Right. So you
just learned through
different fish would give off.
That's right, different signals sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So in your father's time, and when you first started fishing.
Well, when the old man started fishing, I don't think they even had a wireless in the boat. All they had was a compass. Because up until the latter years, we never used charts or anything. It was also like local knowledge. Like, we done more travelling around the British Isles when I took over from the old man, and we never had a chart. But nowadays, like, everybody's got charts now. Well, it's part of the rules now.
Oh, right. So there's a lot more legislation.
That's right. Well, what the old folks used to do, go on landmarks sort of thing.
Right.
And then time and dead reckoning, there was a lot of theirs. Like nowadays, I don't suppose as many fellas look at the land.
Yeah.
They just look at their deck and navigator. Well, deck and navigator, well, they changed now, they're all digital readers. But when I started, there was three clocks, a red one, green, and a purple one. And that would be a master one. And a red one, like there's a station up in Burrowhead, I think, that sent the green one down, and one in Northern Ireland, so you just cross reference.
Oh, right.
And you just moved along, and it was all squared off in sectors and all sorts of things. But I remember the old man getting his, and that wasn't until the late 60s. And as I said, they didn't even have a wireless in.
I was going to ask how you sort of found, sort of when you're both doing the herring and doing the scallops of Queenie's life at sea, because in the folklore survey we've got at the museum, some people sort of say, oh, it was a good job, there were no commons, and other people say it was the worst thing they'd ever done, and it was cold and it was wet and it was miserable and they hated it.
Actually, it's warmer at sea many a day than what it is on the land. What's called, when you're coming at night time, you've got frosty weather. When you come at night time, you get a mile or two up a land, you can feel it hitting you, like it's like a wall coming into the coop. Yeah. Well, it's only a few winters ago there, I never wore a coat the whole day at sea. Like, unless it was raining or blowing sort of thing, but most days you never wear a coat. It depends on a lot of it on how well your boat was kept and what problems you had. If your gear and everything was all up to scratch, or your machinery was up to scratch, you didn't have many problems. But if you your gear's getting knackered or something, like you start something up breaks, so you got to be on the deck fixing it.
Right.
But as a rule, like if you kept your machinery well maintained and whatnot, there wasn't many problems. If you're on build site, you get rained off. But we never got rained off. But yeah, had oil skins. It was no trouble. I can't say anything. Years ago, I can see them having problems because they didn't have no coopers and nothing on the boats. But nowadays, some boats are better off than what many houses are. I know one boat's got two tellies aboard and a video. That's a new one, like. But there's heating. Some boats have central heating all through them. I used to have a radiator in the wheelhouse of mine. So the boys used to have an oil fire stove down below, plus gas cooker, and wireless, and tellies at them. It's what you made of the job, really.
So you never had any problems with seasickness or anything?
No. Everybody has, at some time or other, had some sort of a problem, but yeah. It was nothing of things. Like, if you hadn't changed your fuel filters, or if you got a dirty patch of fuel, you'd have to go down and change that sort of thing. But as a rule, you didn't get much problems. And if you did get a problem, 99% of the time you wouldn't be able to fix it anyways.
Right.
So you either got a toe in then or your lip back in, whichever.
Right.
Mm. As the boats get older, like they do tend to give more trouble sort of thing. As if the machinery's not maintained. But as a rule, you didn't get much problems at all.
Right. What changes have you sort of seen since you were a child in sort of like Douglas and around the Quayside? I should imagine you've seen quite a few changes.
Yeah. Well, around the Quayside is all buildings, like, and the fishing patterns have all changed to what they were like now, mainly because of economics. That's a big word. Shut up, don't want you on this. things have certainly got better, but in some respects, like you're not working the conditions that the old fellas used to do. There's a lot more restrictions. The restrictions like on fishing now are something ridiculous. But really speaking, it hasn't really changed. My life pattern hasn't changed in my lifetime. I still do the same routes every year, go up and down the same roads. It's only the buildings. There's a different attitude to people now to what there was years ago. There's not the people that will turn around and help you like they used to. They'd criticise you, but they wouldn't help you.
Yeah.
Whereas one time you'd come alongside the wall and there'd be half a dozen people that would tie a rope for you.
Right.
But now you'd be lucky if you get one.
Have sort of things like, I don't know, when you were a young boy, was there a lot more sort of workshops and, sort of it being a working harbour with sort of things connect? I mean, nowadays you've got sort of shops.
We haven't got the things that, most of our welding used to get done down in Port St Mary. Whereas one time they were done in Douglas. Most of the things now for ourselves, it's out of Douglas now mostly. The steam packet, they never done anything. But this last few years, they just started to do one or two fishing boats, like mainly they were wrapped up in their own boats. They do the odd little job for you, but I can't remember having much done. We must have had some done. But there's not the little firms or the one-man band sort of thing to help you like there was years ago. They've changed sort of thing. It's a job to put your hand on when you come to think of it. The biggest thing I see is more paperwork to what there ever was before. well, when I started around 20 million young men, there was no such thing of all these paper things to fill in, or like, so go out the harbour now, we got to call up for clearance.
Right.
The harbour's nowhere near as busy as what it was,
yeah,
30 years ago. Like 30 years ago, the harbour was that busy, like in the summertime, with rowing boats and steam packet boats coming in and out. Well, one time I think these owned 10 or a dozen boats, so that could be wrong with one or two either way. And then there used to be, two or 300 rowing boats down on the promenade, maybe not quite that many. There was no wireless, and the boats still came in and out the harbour, no trouble. But now, is that thing now, at least the steam packet boats are not really much bigger than what they were then. But everybody knew what the signals were, so they just, well, when we used to come in with their own boats, like, oh, I think the old man had about 30 anyways, when the steam packet boat blew, you knew he was going out. So he used to just go around the circle till he got cleared and then come in afterwards. But nowadays they're shouting about a half an hour beforehand, like the harbour masters, to keep clear. Just more restrictions gone on the fishing to what there was years ago. Like in the Alamout, we're getting policed at sea. We were getting policed on the land. You got to fill all your returns in, like your landing decorations, what you caught, how many hours you done, and where you were fishing, and what your gear you were towing, and everything else, and even the price of it. Well, all these things for a fisherman was unheard of, and now it's just gone ridiculous to what it was now. And then you're getting, you got to go through your DTI and all sorts of things, which, well, there was never enough of them till, they just sort of started coming in the 70s. We sort of got stopped up in Scotland one time to get a life raft and fire extinguishers, but we never actually got stopped from fishing. But nowadays they can stop you now with a fellow just to sign your paper. You got to take them out of the water and he goes around and checks the hull and everything. And the paperwork or anything he doesn't like, you've got to renew it. And so your expense, that's the biggest thing now. The biggest thing that, like, they used to go to sea in a shoestring, some fellas at one time. I can never put it all in order.
Yeah.
Well, the other brother is, the younger brother, he's going around at the moment taking all the old photographs he finds. He's putting them all on video.
Oh, right.
So he's more into the older things than what I am, especially the build, well, anything old.
Yeah. That's your brother Neil?
No, there's another brother,
Roger.
Right.
And he's, both your brothers are fishing?
We sold two boats there last year. We're just looking for another boat now. And the other fellow's in the steam packet at the moment.
Right. So are you going to go back into Scollop and Queenies?
No, don't like the hours.
Right.
We're just going to get a smaller one.
Right.
At the moment.
What do you think you'll be sort of fishing? Is it sort of
pots?
Oh, right, so that's going to be crabs and lobsters.
That's right, yeah. Hopefully.
Right. So how's the potting different?
Well,
dredging.
Dredging, you're trawling, herring, you're trawling, pots are just static gear.
Right.
So you just throw your pot out over this. Just throw your pot over and leave it for a day or so and then come back and pick it up. It's baited, like, you know.
Yeah.
So we think it could be a lot easier.
So that's just really a matter of a few hours a day,
that's
putting them out.
Hopefully it's like that, yeah. And make a fortune. Yeah. Well, we're only just started into that. Like, we weren't intending to go back fishing, but there's no jobs or things for us because, well, we'd have a job, work for somebody else.
Yeah.
Like, we've always worked for ourselves all our lives, I think. So to go and work for a boss now, we could be a bit crooked, a bit of Manx come out.
Yeah.
I don't know, I got to go out and put the damn things to you.
So you've always sort of like enjoyed the independence of being self-employed?
Well, it's something we've always been used to, again. It's just the way things, we just take things as they come, more or less. Well, I do anyways. I worked with the odd skip, but that was years ago, but that was the whole thing. Because, you know, the likes of today, you'd have the day off.
Right.
You know, when it's blowing as hard as this. And when it was fine, like, you just, well, we used to, Well, at one time we used to work every day of the week, but that slowly changed over the years as well. Like when we just knocked off at the Crystal Light, we were only fishing off 5 days a week and do it that way. Like we'd fish a Saturday, but we haven't fished a Sunday since, or one or two Sundays since 70s, late 60s. When we started fishing Queenies full time, see, all Scouts and Queenies at one time used to get dumped. They were a nuisance.
Yeah.
But now things, now we dumped all them, but we were fishing them all now.
Right.
And the Queenies were the same.
When did it sort of start that people, rather than chucking them, were actually sort of...
Well, Scouts started a lot of years ago. They must have started in the 40s or something like that. Well, I'm not sure, but I think it was somewhere in the 40s. And Queenies mainly started in 68, 69, wasn't it, around here? That's when we got married somewhere around.
Right.
So that's how I can remember that bit, yeah. Sarah, same again, there used to be loads of boats on that too, but boats got bigger and better and greedier or whatever way you want to put it. But some boats, like we have a lot of Kakubri boats fishing down around about, but they had about 3 hours steaming doing, so they got bigger boats to do, so they didn't lose out something for the weather and whatnot. Didn't have to go home in little dinghies.
Yeah.
But at that time too, their grant system up there helped them a lot.
Right.
Where else was lagging behind.
Yeah. How big was the boat that you had?
Ours was 55 foot registered, but 56, 57 overall.
Right.
The other ones were mainly around, average around 50 foot. Which was a step up to what the U40s, like, you know, if you think back, they come from Nickies and Noddies. Well, money, you used to get some big numbers there as well. But it mainly say 30, 40 footers, and then they just moved up through the things as the engines going on.
Right.
You know, things got modern.
Yeah.
But then the Alaman seems to stop.
Right.
But the main reason you stick, well, in my own opinion, a 50 foot size boat is ideal for the Alaman. Suitable for the harbours. When you see what some of these fellows now got, the bigger boats, the messing they have, admittedly they'll put more time in at sea, or should do. But when they come like so today, if the wind was, the easterly wind that we had last week, they got to wait for near high water to get into the harbours where, you know, they got a bigger draft.
Yes.
Well, there's a 7 foot one, you get in 2 hours on the side of high water. Well, they had to wait till high water. So.
Did you, in Douglas Harbour, did you always have sort of like one place where you could berth the boat, or was it whatever
space?
It was
mainly, well, mainly on the North Quay. When we went outside, it was more or less out to the breakwater, outside the piers, outside the swing bridge.
Yes.
That was mainly whatever berths were available. But and Quayside was mainly kept for fishing boats, I think, but it wasn't no private berths, I think.
Yeah.
Like, anybody could go and lie in your
right.
berth. If you were suitable to lie outside them, you could lie outside them if there was nowhere else, I think. No, we got no private treatment.
Right. Now, I wasn't sure if there was an area of the quay that was
well,
reserved.
The whole lot is funny because years ago in the 60s, when there was lots of people coming to the island, I think, from what everybody tells me, I can't really remember now, but there was only about 3 or 4 harbour masters. And nowadays, and that was so... They had quite a lot of shipping in and out, steamers and whatnot. And nowadays they only got about 4 sailors, but they got about 8 harbour masters.
Right.
Like, doing watches, like, yeah.
Like,
well, they have the chief harbour master now is a harbour director or something like that. And you have a Douglas harbour master and a duty harbour master. That's only in Douglas alone.
Right. So, how did it used to work with the swing bridge? Did you used to have to sort of like. Radio to the swing bridge for it to be open for you?
No, it used to be manned, was it 3 hours either side of high water, I think it was, yeah. And then they'd be on till 11 o'clock at night time, then it was just open and left open. That was it, yeah. 3 hours either side of high water, I think it was, and then that was during daytime. And then at night time, like, they'd be on till 11 o'clock, so they just depend on the tide. And that'd be all left open until 6 o'clock or something, 7 o'clock. It just depend how they felt.
Yeah.
Then we used to just pull up to the bridge and, as I say, say the man was there, nowadays he's got called Douglas Harmon now 3 miles out, or supposed to. Well, they log you in and out now, everything.
When, I was thinking when you sort of started fishing, when you were at school, were many of the ones you went to school with going to fishing as well, or were you sort of one of the few?
Down in the quayside in the summertime, like with the rowboats, there was lots of kids. Fellas around your own age, like Christmas and everything. But as that went away, like the kids went, but actually there's very few. Like when we used to go down, meet the old man in most nights, and there would be somebody down, because he'd be down fishing by the steamers and whatnot at that time. You don't see nobody down there, bloody years. Even our own fellas didn't come down. Brendan come down a few times, didn't he? Paul, I don't think, ever came down.
No. So your own children were never actually interested in...
Yes, Brendan was fishing up till last year as well.
Right.
Okay, he's our eldest one. He more or less been fishing from school, wasn't he?
That's all he ever wanted to do. And he was on the lifeboat team.
That's right, yeah. He did come in the lifeboat as well.
So, did you sort of encourage him in wanting to go to the fishing, or you didn't think
no.
he should?
Out of our whole family, the only one that was sort of, well, not encouraged, but the only one that really did sort of let go was a brother older than me, and he was sort of allowed to go. The rest of us were all supposed to go for trades or something at that time, and we didn't really get any good, well, we didn't get no encouragement to go fishing. Same with Brendan, we get no encouragement. In fact, I do my best to keep him out of it.
Why didn't you want to encourage him if you didn't actually mind fishing yourself?
Because it's not steady money.
Yeah.
That was the main thing. Well, you can have a good week here this week and nothing next week. And so you never really knew where you were. But like, you couldn't say, oh, I'll put £5 a week away or something like that.
So do you think that was why your father didn't encourage you to go to the fishing?
Quite possibly, yeah. But like when I did start, it was good money fishing then. Like there was a lot more stuff around, like it was good money. Well, the first week's
in the interview with Robert Collin, I've just checked to where it finished, and it was, you were saying about your first week's wages at the fishing.